right, welcome everyone to Radio Free Nintendo. This is episode 199, the countdown, the final. Yes, and we are back from E3. It's been a week since our last episode.
E3 ended exactly 41 minutes ago last week.
Yeah, I feel like a different person. I know you do, James.
I'm a much sicker person than I was a week ago.
Yeah, I actually feel a lot healthier now because we respond to it differently or deal with it on different schedules. But we are very happy to be back behind our computers, spread out all over the world, doing it the normal way, and have joined, of course, by John Lindemann.
Don't call it a comeback. I've been here for years.
Barely.
That's true. Yes, it's been a while since we heard from John. It's been a few weeks, so very, very glad to have you back, sir. And Greg Leahy.
Ahoy, ahoy, everyone.
John is back. The dream has died.
So I know John has been primarily kind of babysitting the website for, you know, during the whole E3 thing. I mean, there was a ton of work on the home team front. And, I mean, it was you and a lot of other guys and girls too. But, I know you were kind of trying to supervise the whole thing and orchestrate it all and do a lot of things that are impossible for us to do when we're at the show. I mean, the thing is at E3, you're so close to it that a lot of times we hear rumors and we're like asking each other and eventually we just, one of us has to go to the website and check on it. Cause like in a lot of cases, not only you guys, the staff members, but the readers at home actually know more than we do about what's going on.
Yeah, you're in the zone kind of thing. I know.
I have a great example, which is we didn't realize there were playable 3DS games until like halfway through the end of the first day.
Yeah.
And the only reason we even thought there could be is because I overheard the guy who was running Nintendo's booth having a conversation with another Nintendo rep mention a playable Star Fox demo, and I'm like, wait, what? And then basically we ran to the media room. We're like, oh my god, there are playable games up there.
Well, E3 is a madhouse because you go from, it's like you're standing outside the door and you have nothing to do. You step inside the door and you have 1,000 things to do presented to you all at once.
Yes. And meanwhile, there's pounding noise and flashing lights and zombies in cages. It's
the same thing with the home team too. I mean, with the home team, it goes from being like a complete like kind of news blackout in the days leading up to E3, and then on, you know, when all of the press conferences start, it's just an avalanche of not only news but also art assets, press kits that have to be uploaded. It's just the floodgates open.
So anyway, let's jump into new business here. We're going to make it quick this week. John, you don't have anything, right?
Yeah, I've been pretty much, for the past 3 weeks, I've been either traveling or uploading art assets to a website.
Yeah.
So
knocking it out on the site.
Oh, yeah.
All right, man. So, Greg, you've got an update on Galaxy 2.
Yeah, well, I've played pretty much nothing else for the last couple of weeks. Obviously, I just got it when we last recorded together. That weekend, I basically couldn't play it at all because we had the massive pre-E3 show edit, and then there's been the World Cup going on and all sorts of stuff, so I haven't really played it anywhere near as much as I would like, but I've still got 234 stars.
Okay, you've played it plenty.
Long since passed me, so.
Pretty much wherever I can fit it in, I've been knocking. It is, you know, the structure of the game, like the first Galaxy, is very possible to just go in for any amount of time that you like and you can achieve something that's satisfying, even if it's one or two stars.
Yeah, pretty much right up until the end where there's like three stars left and you hate all of them. You can pretty much do something.
I didn't find that too bad. This, as I say, is much less irksome than, I mean, you know, Mario 64 was the only N64 game I had for months. But yeah, and this is when I was a kid, when I had lots of time. And it took me months to get 120 because those stars were really difficult. These are not nearly so difficult.
No, there's like one or two that are just, ugh.
Like I said, you could get in there, you can have a little bit of fun with it, or you could just become completely absorbed and just keep going. Because it keeps serving up new ideas, you know, that sort of, at least the initial phase of the game, so rapidly. It's this sort of constant cycle of appetite and satisfaction over and over and over again. And you could just keep going, and even when you die a lot and you get that purple guy kind of making you feel like an addict, he's like, yeah, you might want to take a little break now.
Oh, yeah,
like,
that bastard.
Bugger off, Grimace. I'll tell you when I've had enough. You know?
like a true addict. Get away from me.
You know, you really struggled with this last one. Maybe you should take a break. Maybe you should fuck off.
But yes, yeah, there's been some of that, definitely. But in general, the real takeaway is the game is sublime. It is so much fun. In terms of the level design, I think it is perhaps somewhat more significantly different than James kind of concluded it to be, in my opinion. The open-ended areas of almost been eliminated.
Yeah, I mean, there's a handful of them, but you're right.
You are only talking about two explicit throwbacks to previous Mario 3D games.
Yeah, and one is extremely explicit.
One, and then the other one is pretty, obvious what they're going for. And those are the most, the only real open bits in the game. The rest of it's very linear, whether it be literally 2D or whatever. And definitely one of the highlights for me in terms of the level design is when they use the sort of tube levels that are kind of quasi 2D, but you're going around the rotating tube or kind of log, yeah, or whatever, where there really is no kind of down. You're just going around everything. Those are fantastic. Lots of really inventive stuff around this sort of environment changing with relative to you doing the spin attack or changing to the rhythm of the music, all this kind
I think
of stuff.
The gravity switching 2D levels are really interesting and fun. And I've only got about 50 stars, I think. I haven't played it in a little while because I got distracted by other games. I'm going to go back
and
to it.
E3, obviously.
Yeah, and E3, of course.
So, the gravity switchy stuff I really like. There was definitely better exploitation of variable gravity kind of mechanics in this one, I thought.
The 2D levels in Galaxy 2, at least the ones that I've played so far, I think show far more imagination and fun than anything I saw in New Super Mario Bros. Wii. Playing Galaxy 2 made me realize why I really was never all that enthusiastic about New Super Mario Bros. Wii, because it feels like a very basic, simple version of what could have been done.
Little bits of rote by comparison. I mean,
yeah. Oh, very much so.
This is brimming with ideas all the time, and as much in the, whether it's 2D or the planetoid stuff, whatever it is, that it's always bringing just this flair to the table that I don't think they probably felt they had a formula that worked commercially on the DS, and they didn't really want to stray too far from it with the Wii game. So that's what is really wonderful about this brand of Mario is just how creative it feels. And I think the power-ups in this one, I thought, were pretty much all more interesting than anything in the first one. I mean, I thought Yoshi's obviously great. He works really well with the pointer. The cloud power-up is fun. The drill in particular.
The drill is surprisingly fun to use, yeah.
Yeah, I found really that great. To be like an alternating between fun and frustrating, though, because sometimes you really don't know exactly where you're going to wind up on the other side.
That's part of the fun, though. I mean, yeah, I like how it leaves that marker on the ground to show where you've drilled previously, so you can use that as a kind of a point of reference and figure out, oh, I need to get a little farther over to the side. I think it's fantastic puzzle solving, basically.
Yeah, I absolutely love it. And I mean, one of the things that this Galaxy does almost to a fault is it seems to take things from the first one and maybe refine them a little, or do something that better with them. But perhaps there was an argument for just excising them altogether.
The B suit. They didn't really make it better.
The B suit is one case. I mean, it's definitely better. It's in smaller doses. It isn't in some big, expansive, open-ended level.
I'll give you that. But it's not really more fun to use.
It's primarily in the side-scrolling application, which I think the way they designed the one key level with the B suit is definitely better suited to that power-up and everything. So, I mean, I commend that. But as I said, do you say might it have been better just to get rid of it altogether? Similarly, with the fluzzard flying minigame, it's better than the Manta Ray motion control game from the first one. It's less frustrating,
right?
But again, perhaps it would just be best to move on, and some of that I would say was reflected in the game structure. There is obviously a key difference with they've streamlined it down, the kind of the hub world things down to the barest nub, and you've got the overworld map and everything, but it's not the overhaul that I was hoping for when Galaxy 2 was first announced. It is still 120 stars, really you're dealing with, and a smaller number to defeat the final boss before that. And to me, sometimes just the adherence to that number which was arbitrary in the first place 14 years ago.
So true.
Yeah. And now apparently it's taken on this sort of religious, iconic status.
It's canon now. There are 120 stars in the galaxy.
And I think the problem that presents is that sometimes what you do is is the making up of the numbers. Sometimes they make up the numbers, you know, with some of these comet challenges, some of the comet challenges I really like, and certainly aren't any as irksome as the open-ended 100 coin collecting that there was one or two in the original galaxy, or certainly not as irksome as the 100 coin collecting in the previous two 3D Mario games. But there are still some that just feel like filler type stuff, and I think it's sort of perverse that in a game that above any other has no paucity of ideas, I mean, it's just brimming with them, it's full of them, it shames most games creatively that we should be talking about it having a problem of filler.
Well, I mean,
it doesn't have to be the case. I think it's only really the case that we talk about that because there are some challenges where it's like they are making up the numbers and there's no need. Who cares about 120? Why not have fewer extra challenges and just make them more unique?
It's actually a doubly bad because not only are the comet stars still more or less, you know, not all that interesting a lot of times, but you still have to go through the whole collection of the coins to get to it anyway. Which feels completely superfluous at this point.
Well, I think are you talking about the comet medals?
Yeah,
they're fun to find.
Well, that's an addition. That was not in the previous one. It was much more sort of opaque last time as how the comets themselves actually were.
Well,
activated.
And the comets are stationary in this game too.
They came and went before, which is why they were called comets. But I think the comet medals are a good addition. I think because they are a bit like the star coins in New Super Mario Bros. Yeah, they'll put them in sometimes obscure locations. Other times it will be just a location that's quite explicit, but you might have to do something advanced to get to it or put yourself at some sort of risk. I mean, I thought they were quite a welcome addition, but I just think it boils down to the fact that they impose this arbitrary restriction on themselves, that they end up doing things that are not creatively driven. But what I wanted to get onto that's related to that is the post-game stuff.
Spoiler territory.
This is going to be spoiler territory for anyone who doesn't want to delve into this yet. So you could skip ahead at this point.
No, don't ruin it for me. I'm just about to play it.
John's got 8 stars. Come on, he's almost there.
Don't worry, by the time I play it, I will have forgotten completely about this. So,
not only that, he will have forgotten everything.
Yeah.
I'll be in a home, so I probably won't even have a console near me. I'll be restrained, I'm sure.
So what will happen, obviously, again, yes, you fight Bowser 3 times and the fights are fundamentally the same.
Yes.
And then you will collect 120 stars after that. But what happens then is you have a sort of a second quest, but instead of Luigi just playing through the same levels again, what happens is that all the levels, all the world, the galaxies, are repopulated with new green stars.
Yes.
Which there, again, is 120 of, because there has to be 120 of them. And these are basically just stars that are hidden, scattered in the levels, generally in obscure locations, although some are kind of more out in the open, but what you'll have to do to get them is some sort of fancy advanced maneuver that you don't really need to do in the normal game, like a triple jump at a specific point, or a Yoshi jump. They made me do it.
That sounds like fun.
Or something like the pull stars, you know, when you do like crazy stuff like that with those. There's some pretty tricky stuff involved.
Whip around.
But the vast majority of them are just kind of in obscure locations. They're just hidden. And that's really where the fact that the camera is so directed in this game, you know, you seldom have very much control over it, or maybe you'll be able to go in a first person mode, but because the camera is so directed, they can play on that. They know there's certain bits that you either wouldn't be able to see at all, or you wouldn't be able to see very easily, and so you're almost getting into that territory of, you know, hiding stuff off the screen in the 2D
games. Well, God
of
War does that a lot. Which, you know, God of War also has an automatic camera. In fact, there's no camera control at all in God of War.
Yeah.
So in Galaxy, you can at least go into first person. You can sometimes, you know,
rotate
revolve the camera to some extent. But in God of War, it's completely fixed. and they do that all the time. They make it to where you kind of have to walk to the very edge of the screen in order to tease the camera over to reveal the secret area. So you really have to be looking for it in order to find that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's very much what is happening here in quite a few cases. But then what it is the stars make a little sparkly noise. So it's kind of like getting into Metroid Prime secret missile upgrade territory. It's like, all right, I can hear the sound, so let's start poking around. And it really does make you look at the level designs in a different way, because you know, what it makes you realize is just how much you were just plowing forward without a sort of a inquisitive kind of nature to the gameplay, as you might have done in the old 3D Marios, because they were explorative. And now all of a sudden you're looking at the levels in this different way of trying to find where these things have been secreted. And some of them are really cleverly kind of hidden or, like I said, require these challenging maneuvers and are really quite satisfying to find. And then others are in levels that really just don't have a lot of capacity to have stars hidden in them because of the way they were designed originally. And it's like, well, you know, what's the point? I mean, you're only having them here again to make up the numbers. It's a bit sad. Again, yeah. It might have been better to streamline these down into fewer hidden stars, or perhaps even then integrate them into the main game a bit more. You know, I really would have liked, there were a few hidden stars that worked similarly in the first 120, and I would have really enjoyed the idea of, you know, some of the, using these kind of more almost old school 2D sort of hidden exit kind of techniques to have an overworld map that branches like a Super Mario World or something like that, you know, that really takes advantage of these things. Instead, it's just kind of all lumped together at the end. And I think some of the reason for that is because there is an issue when you kind of putting them in these obscure locations of perspective being a problem. You know, you're trying to jump off into the distance to get this star and you're not quite sure where you are in relation to them. And of course, given the timing of when I was playing Mario Galaxy 2, it made me think of the 3DS. Of the idea this kind of gameplay would actually be made quite a lot easier.
Yes.
If you could perceive the depth. And it does make me wonder what they might do with a 3D Mario on 3DS, in the sense that maybe this kind of gameplay could be incorporated more into the mainstream rather than this kind of second quest for people that just can't put the damn game down, like me. So it does make you realise, looking back on playthrough the game the first time, just how well constructed it was from the point of view that the camera and the perspective was never an issue when you were playing the proper game, if you will.
Right.
You know, that was never a problem whatsoever. You didn't even think about it. And then you get these hidden stars and it's like, oh yeah, that's right. You know, I do have an issue with perspective and it is a 3D world that I'm only seeing on a 2D play.
You know, there's one star in the entire first 120 I could think of where they screw with perspective in such a way you can't get it. And it's one of those, the chimp stars, where you basically have to fall off a cliff to get to it and there's no way of seeing it. But besides that, you're right. I think I know
the one you're talking about. But yeah, other than that, they kind of put that off in a box on the side. But it does make you realize how meticulously constructed.
Yeah,
the regular game
I hadn't
is.
Thought about it that way before, though. But you're right. I mean, I can't think of a single star. I had to struggle with the camera to at least see where it is. Now, how to get there is a different issue sometimes.
Yeah, that's true.
But you know, it's funny you mentioned the 3DS though, because your comments are almost verbatim from what Iwata's been saying, where, you know, 3D Mario games, it's hard to see where you should be jumping sometimes. And Miyamoto's made similar comments where it's hard to quite understand exactly where you would land, whereas in a 2D game, you can tell exactly where you're going
to
land.
And Neil was discussing these issues with reference to that, well, that Pogo Stick Cat game or whatever, one of the tech demos.
That is an amazing tech demo that no one else will ever play.
I didn't get to see it, and I wish I had.
It's not a fun game, but it drives the point home.
Right. It's a curious bit of fitting timing, because beforehand I would have struggled to give you, really to realise myself, a sort of concrete example of just how it would be enhanced, and then I was presented with one.
It's almost like they designed Galaxy 2 and said, hey, you know, remember this star? Yeah, it'd be a lot easier with this, wouldn't it?
I think the whole 3D platforming thing is going to be put to the test this fall with Little Big Planet 2, which I'm pretty sure is supporting 3D graphics. I mean, almost all the new PS3 games are. But, you know, we've talked before with Little Big Planet about how those three different layers of depth are confusing, and, you know, it's hard to tell which one you're on and which one different objects are lying on and how you move back and forth. And supposedly they're clearing some of that up with the sequel, with some of the tweaks they've made. They also claim they're fixing the jumping, which I'm excited to try.
It's funny you mention that, because I actually played Little Big Planet for the first time ever on the show floor.
So you played the second one.
Right, but I was still totally like, why am I just falling off this platform? And I realized, oh, it's because I'm actually between two platforms in depth.
Yeah.
And you just jump and you just keep flying back down.
So it's still a problem in the sequel then. But, you know, maybe the 3D mode in that, for the very few people who get to use it, maybe that will alleviate it. I'm interested as a proof of concept. I'm interested to see how that affects.
But that's the beauty of the 3DS is just that, you know,
everybody has it.
Exactly. Because it's built into the hardware itself, you can design games with that liberty.
People I've spoken to since I got back, they don't quite get what the 3D is like until you explain it this way.
I can't really even relate to the kind of issues that you guys are talking about, because I've never played it.
I can explain this pretty well, okay. I think, because I've done this speech like 40 times now. Mm-hmm. it's not like a 3D movie from, say, 2004 all the way back to like 1960, where it was like stuff's coming out at you and you're thinking, oh my god.
Yeah,
I think it can probably pull that off.
I think it can,
the games,
but that's
weren't,
not what,
you know,
they're
the demos
showing.
Weren't showing that, because I don't think anybody really wants that.
What they're showing instead
I
is
I want Jaws 3D the game.
Quaid. What it's designed for,
one of his better roles, what?
And what we saw is rather that you see into things. It's almost like a diorama.
It's more like Avatar.
See, the thing is, too, I haven't seen Avatar in 3D either. So
think about looking into, look at like a diorama you built in school where there's a foreground and then there's grounds behind it you can see into.
So instead of stuff popping out at you, it actually feels like you can reach into it.
Exactly.
It's very similar to depth of field blur. You know, this is how games have sort of done it in the past, where they make things look artificially out of focus because, you know, like in a film, things are out of focus when they're not right up in the foreground.
Like in 3D. Game Heroes.
Yes, very much. Okay. Whereas if 3D. Game Heroes was actually on a 3D display, probably they would take away that blur.
Yeah, you wouldn't need it.
Right, you wouldn't need that. It's probably it's exaggerated to get the point across, I think. Mm-hmm. So you can turn that off, or at least dial it way down, and instead use the 3D effect to make those things look like they are actually farther away from you than the things that are in the foreground. Mm-hmm. Even though, of course, you're actually looking at a piece of glass.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the idea. It's not about things like reach. It's not about golf balls flying at your face.
Which is funny, because the video they showed before they showed off the 3DS is exactly the opposite, where it's crap flying out of your face.
Oh, yeah, like Bowser reaching out of the system.
Yeah, and like arrows come flying out and stuff.
Yeah, it's really not like that at all. But I mean, I think
I can see console games being more like that, though. Kind of more gimmicky, like throwing stuff at you, like especially like racing games and first-person shooters.
It depends
and stuff
on
like
the creators. You know, it depends on what they want to do with it.
It's actually kind of... I think the best way of putting it is that it actually makes it feel like you're looking at stuff that's really in front of you versus just looking at a TV set.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Which is such a weird sensation. That
it's eerie.
I mean, people ask me what it was like. My first thought is, it's kind of creepy, to be honest. I mean, it's like...
It's something that we're going to have to get used to, for sure. I mean, James, I wonder if you had this experience, but I remember I'd been playing 3DS for over half an hour at the booth. I'd been playing all kinds of different demos. And by that time, I was really getting used to it. You know, I would come up to the system. I kind of knew what to expect, and my eyes just kind of locked into it. You know, my brain was set up for that. I was expecting it. So I was able to just really dial in this, you know, I'd pop the slider up and kind of dial it in very quickly for what I wanted. And then I had to leave there and run over to get in line for the Nintendo Roundtable. And I was over there and I saw Billy in line. I'm talking to him and a couple other people. And I'm just kind of looking around, and it felt like my vision was messed up. Like I was seeing things in more depth than normal. You know, like my depth perception was altered.
Whoa, Billy, you look really deep.
I think it was just my brain was having trouble getting back to seeing things normally.
It was kind of a weird, because I went from the 3DS to a series of DS demos based on my schedule, and that was really trippy.
It must have been really jarring.
It was like,
visuals.
What is going on?
Yeah, I mean, the 3DS is going to, you know, when you hear people talk about how the first time you see it, you just are like amazed. It's just like, oh, wow. Like I can almost guarantee you will have a verbal response the first time that you look at the 3DS
definitely.
Screen. And it's because you've never really seen anything like it. And I have to say, it looks different than 3D with glasses on. Mm-hmm. Like your brain just processes it differently, I think. it's very weird. I mean, I found it to be a pleasant experience. It didn't give me a headache. It didn't bother me. I didn't feel like I was going cross-eyed, but it is a strange sensation.
I think it's you know, to try to bring it back to where we started, I think it's going to come back down to, you know, how the experiences are crafted for this thing. So if we get, like we were discussing, these platformers that really make use of depth as a way of making it a game mechanic, mm-hmm. by making these, judging these distances, not so much just an area of timing and saying, okay, Mario can jump X spaces, and I think that's X plus one spaces, but it's going to come around in a minute, so I need to time it to when it's almost there. Mm. Versus saying, okay, but the platform's also this wide, it's this high, stuff like that, we're going to be like, wow.
Yeah, it makes it, it lets you, well, we talked about the fact that the Galaxy 2's camera is even more restrictive than the original's, and that's fine because it, you know, generally is always kind of, not necessarily exactly where you'd want it, but you can always deal with it. But what you find yourself doing with these green stars is saying, okay, now, let me put it in first person and look at the star from this point, and then let me look at it from another point and kind of interpolate and figure out where it is in 3D space.
I don't even want to get those.
But the point is that it's on 3DS, you wouldn't have to do that. And that would mean that they wouldn't even have to let you have the capacity to futz with the camera to actually achieve that. They could make the camera even more specifically directed.
Yeah.
Because it would be reasonable to expect that you could just judge it from that single view.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think you could, as long as they set up everything correctly, I think that's exactly right. I think they could just say, this is the angle from which this game makes sense, and with this in mind, you know, you
well,
can
see
everything.
They've already achieved that a lot with Galaxy as it is. And then if you add in the ability to perceive depth, I think they can make an even more tightly directed experience, but one that is not necessarily completely linear, completely always driving forward, that could actually be about exploring nooks and crannies a bit more like a Super Mario World type experience.
You know, if you want to know what a 3D display or 3D perspective can bring to a platformer, I'd say look at Super Paper Mario. I mean, that's a game that is all
which
about...
Which is coming out for the 3DS.
Well, no, that's just Paper Mario.
Excuse me.
And I think...
But I mean, it's a working title, obviously.
Yeah. Right. But I mean, Super Paper Mario is a game that is all about shifting perspectives and showing a 2D thing and then showing it in 3D and, oh, well, there's all this stuff hidden. And
yes,
it's not exactly the same thing, but I think that's the first thing that comes in my head when I think about what this might bring to it and how they might be able to arrange, you know, platforms or jumping challenges, mm-hmm. things like that, that require you to kind of think in three dimensions, even though you're looking at a 2D thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, you could do things like, even with a Mario game, just like a straightforward platforming Mario game, I mean, you could do stuff like in one room, have hidden exits hidden behind stuff.
Yeah, and totally.
It could get really crazy.
I really do feel confident that with the kind of groundwork that they've been doing with all the kind of perspective craziness and planetoids and gravity and all of the galaxy, that they are ready to grapple with these sort of challenges and opportunities with both hands.
Grapple might be the right word. I think they might actually... I think there are going to be a lot of game designers who tear their hair out trying to make sense of what they have to do.
It's a specifically chosen word because I don't think it'll be easy.
Well, I look forward to seeing tons of on-rail shooters. I think that's really where the industry's going.
Well, unfortunately, John, I think you're right.
Kid Icarus.
They showed Kid Icarus. And
I think there's going to be a lot of that.
The first thing I heard somebody gasp was, Sin and Punishment. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
It's Kid Icarus.
Yeah, that's kind of like Kid Icarus to me, I mean, it looked to me kind of like a Space Harrier sort of game.
It is a Space Harrier sort of
game.
Well,
and that's pretty much what Sin and Punishment is too.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
you know, we still don't know that much about Kid Icarus.
No.
I mean,
and it probably have multiple play styles, kind of like the original.
You know? That was the
Because it's all thing like he's flying for 5 minutes and then he reaches the ground.
If you watch the Iwata Asks on it, you kind of get a good idea of what's going on.
Yeah. Can you believe how young Sakurai looks in that, by the way? He's not that young.
I saw Sakurai in person. Yeah, he looks like he's like 15 years old.
He's been working for ages. He must be like 40 at least.
They probably got him cheap when he was 12. they just paid him in like...
That sounds wrong.
They paid him in candy.
Oh, God. So we got to move on now. And James, did you have anything you wanted to mention in new business?
I'll pass on it this week since we're kind of running long on this.
Yeah. And, you know, with E3, James and I haven't been playing a whole lot really the past couple weeks, but I did manage to rent and complete Dead Space Extraction, so I wanted to talk about it just for a few minutes. I believe I'm not the first person on the show to have played it.
No, I own it for a relative pittance and played it to completion.
Right. Yes, it can be had for a relative pittance, as you say, at this point, but even then, I was more comfortable renting it, really.
It's very much in that ballpark, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a renter. It really is. But, I had a pretty good time with it. It is a guided first-person experience. And I'm not really a big fan of the whole rail shooter light gun game thing.
The light gun game, yeah. The rail shooter for me is Sin and Punishment Star Fox.
Star Fox,
right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, this isn't even a rail shooter because you just go forward.
Well, you go whichever way the game tells you to go. And that's
right. You go in eight. This is more akin to the Suda 51 game.
Killer 7?
Dude, this is more akin to Killer 7.
No, because Killer 7, you're on a track.
You can go backwards, can't
you? Yes. Yes, you can go backwards. There are places where you make, you can go left or right. Killer 7 is more a traditional first-person shooter where they've just screwed up the controls really badly, actually.
They've just taken away the controls. It's
yeah.
Just gone.
Dead Space Extraction is a really interesting experiment in trying to spice up and deepen the light gun game experience. And I respect it for that. I mean, I think they had heard that, people were getting a little tired of that genre on the Wii. Maybe the initial reaction was, well, I can't believe you're doing this to Dead Space. And I do respect a lot of the things that they're trying to do. I mean, there's a lot more story. I don't know if I'd say there's more variety, but there are some interesting guns and there are some pretty interesting enemies. There's still too much enemy repetition. I mean, the very final battle of the game is you fighting about 50 enemies, all of which you have seen before. So there are aspects of that that I think could have been done better. But, the story stuff is pretty interesting because I think the story's pretty good, actually. At first, I was not really into it because, I didn't play Dead Space for the story, But as it went on, I felt like it actually developed into something fairly interesting. And it's a good thing because there's a lot of it. I mean, as James famously reported from the E3 demo, there are times when you might go 5 minutes without shooting anything in this game where your literally only interaction with the world is shooting.
Is to shoot things.
To shoot things. So there are times when you just watch.
And just constantly probing everything with your kinesis power.
I mean, it effectively, you're just shooting the background to try to grab stuff.
The funny thing is because literally when people are talking, the camera will move around and you'll catch glimpses of different bits in the background. It's like, I could pick up some ammo there, I could pick up some ammo there. But what that means is that while they're talking, you've got the kinesis is picking everything up.
And it looks ridiculous.
So keep talking, love. I'll get back to you. I'm just going to pick up this ammo.
Yes, I'm clearly fascinated by your existential crisis.
Unitology.
Yes, the unitology stuff is pretty fun. But I think the problem with Dead Space Extraction is something that no matter how well they made it, they could never get around. And that's that it doesn't really include any of the gameplay features I really liked about Dead Space. I mean, my favorite thing about Dead Space wasn't blowing off limbs of monsters. It was exploring.
I think you'll find that's called, because we're talking about marketing speak, I think you'll find that's called strategic dismemberment, Johnny. You've got to remember that, but it's not shooting limbs off, it's a crude vernacular like that.
Excuse. Pardonnez-moi.
You got to say it right.
But yeah, I in the original Dead Space, which is a game I really like a lot, I enjoyed the exploration, I enjoyed the sort of quasi RPG stuff where you're upgrading your weapons, you're collecting upgrades and you're choosing how to spend them. You're collecting money and choosing how to spend that. There's a lot of sort of ammo management that can be pretty stressful. And there's a pretty wide variety of gameplay in terms of sometimes you're fixing things, sometimes you're shooting things down with this orbital cannon.
Zero G.
Yeah, yeah. And the problem is that Extraction, because of the kind of game that it is, they can't really pull off any of those elements. I mean, there are parts when you get in the cannon, but it plays exactly like the rest of the game, except you can't change weapons.
Yeah, it's just kind of more sustained as well. I mean, that's the one part where it is just, you know, constant shooting rather than this. Typically, right. It tends to be kind of more, a bit more punctuated when you're just kind of walking along normally. But I think where they, I said this when I played it, where they really missed a trick was just making boss encounters that used more of the gameplay elements of the original Dead Space, you know, the kinesis power, the stasis power, and the different weapon types. I was really hoping for a number of, you know, big set piece boss encounters that were more thoughtful and more, you know, puzzle based than the standard kind of fights that you get. And there's just not, there's a couple of them. I mean,
there's two or three in about an 8 hour game. I mean, it is longer than your average light gun game. You think about 8 hours is probably one of the longest light gun games ever made.
Yeah.
It's a long light gun game.
Like half an hour Ghost Squad or whatever.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's a reason light gun games tend to be short, and it's that you can only do the mechanics so much before you're done.
It's so simplistic.
I mean, if Mad Dog McCree were 8.5 hours long, you'd kill yourself.
There's not enough interaction with the game, and that has always been my problem with it. And I think, you know, Extraction has great production values, an interesting story. It brings a couple of new ideas. They're basically twists on the shooting mechanic. But they do make it's a little more involved than just shoot and reload. You know, there's more to it than that. But ultimately, you can't really control the game enough to make it all that fun.
Engaging over a long period. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're, as it is, you're either shooting or watching. And that's all. And the problem with the storytelling is that it's all done from first person. And it's interesting that you're jumping among two or three different characters throughout the game. But it doesn't really work as a way to tell a story, because you can't control what your character says, but you also can't control where your character goes or even where he looks. And, you know, there are all these moments where I think, wow, I could have really, this crisis could have been averted if you had just let me, like, look another way and shoot this guy. You know, like, I can tell this guy's about to betray you. If the game would let me shoot him,
let me
then
look,
I could
sideways.
Have prevented this. But unfortunately, what it amounts to is a very well-made roller coaster that is very long. And it's actually, I mean, this might sound weird, but, you know, I felt like the first Dead Space was probably a little too long for my taste. Like, I was kind of sick of it towards the end, and I pushed on through and made myself finish it. And this game is definitely too long, even though it's only 8 hours. I was completely sick of it halfway through. I was done. I was like, there's obviously nothing more to show.
I wouldn't say I probably reached that level of dissatisfaction with it, but it's overblown.
Yeah.
So what's the better way of fixing that game? Making it shorter or making it
different?
So for a
start, I mean, just like I said, as the balance for me was out of whack.
Oh, yeah, the aimless wandering.
Yeah, let's fill it with more substance wherever we can. There's more variety wherever we can. You know, that was the thing. I mean, I did feel, you know, when you've got a bunch of different weapons that you've already established in Dead Space, you've got the whole secondary function to the stasis, kinesis, you've got a toolkit there to create varied encounters that they did not fully explore.
You're right. I mean, there could have been sort of a puzzle element to the shooting where you kind of have to figure out, how do I kill this thing?
It's something that actually approached the buzzword strategic dismemberment.
Right, because there's really nothing strategic about it. It's you always dismember the enemy.
The strategy is shoot it till it dies.
Shoot off its legs to slow it down, and then shoot off its arms.
That's a pro tip right there.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, Greg, but ultimately, I think they did 90% of what they could have done to make this really interesting, and the problem is, it's in the wrong genre.
In this arena, I mean, there are diminishing returns to effort, if
yes,
you like.
Absolutely. And it's pretty clear here, because they didn't make Extraction on the cheap. It's clear they put some money in this, they put some effort into it. And it just doesn't save it from, to me, being pretty mediocre.
And now it's going to be packaged in with Dead Space 2 for PS3, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Is it really?
With you know, obviously be able to use the Move. Best thing about it on PS3, about the HD upgrade, is not so much that it will just be in a better resolution, but I assume the reticule will be smaller. It's too damn big.
It is pretty big, yeah.
It really is. If you're playing co-op with two of those things on the screen, no good. Yeah.
Well, I think it will serve very well as a kind of a bonus feature for Dead Space 2, but as its own game, it's a rental if you like light gun games. But I still think, even now, I know this is an old debate, but even now, I feel like it's really a shame that they went with this genre, because it feels like a way to make it cheaper, make it faster, and make it simpler, and presumably appeal to a wider audience, which obviously didn't happen with Extraction. Of course, it's still rated M. It's very gory, and you know, it's a lot of strong language.
Well, I mean, it's strategic dismemberment. I mean,
yeah, no, it's not watered down for the kiddie crowd or anything. But you know, when you've got games like Resident Evil 4 Wii Edition and Metroid Prime 3 Corruption, it's not like they couldn't have done a reasonable facsimile of Dead Space on the Wii and made good use of the motion controls. And instead, we got the first thing that came to mind, which is, let's do it a light gun game. I just think it's sad.
I kind of felt like they played one of the Capcom Resident Evil games and said, okay, now let's make this slower.
What would be easier to make than this? What would require less effort to make?
Oh,
hold on.
A puzzle game. A Dead Space puzzle game.
Exactly. Yeah.
Dead Space Puzzle Fighter.
All right, well, let's wrap this segment because we've got a whole lot of listener mail to get through, a big pile of it, a lot of E3 questions, and I really want to get to that. So we are going to take a break, and we'll be back on the other side. Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com. All right, this week on Now Playing, we've got all kinds of megatons coming out of E3. Nintendo World Report has way too much content this week to summarize in a simple list, so here is a sampling of the stuff you might be missing if you only listen to the podcast and don't check out our fantabulous website, NintendoWorldReport.com.
We have hands-on impressions of a slew of Wii games, including The Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword, Donkey Kong Country Returns, and Kirby's Epic Yarn, 3DS titles like Pilot Wings Resort, Star Fox 64 3D, and Nintendogs Plus Cats, and DS titles like Final Fantasy IV Heroes of Light, Ghost Trick Phantom Detective, and Okamiden.
We have interviews with Alex Noisy from Gaijin Games regarding the BitTrip series, and also an interview with Rob Hilson from EA Sports about the upcoming NBA Jam game for Wii.
We've got videos, lots of videos, videos of everything. We have the E3 show floor, we have some stealth video of the 3D Classic Collection, Mario Kart 3D, and Paper Mario 3D. We've even got some music from Mario Kart, Paper Mario, Pilot Wings, all on 3DS as well, and we didn't lose our press credentials for it.
That's right. Everything 3DS you could possibly want is at NintendoWorldReport.com. We've even got a new edition of Carl's Reset Button feature, where he talks to Hal Barwood about Big Sky Trooper, so listen for that. The audio will be coming up very soon on this very podcast feed. There's also a new special feature detailing which DS games you can look forward to before the 3DS comes out. All of it is on NintendoWorldReport.com, so go check it out right now. All right, we are back for the second half of the show, and we've got tons of listener mail. All these people send in their questions and comments to rfn at NintendoWorldReport.com. And starting up with Dan, I believe John's going to read this first email.
All right, Dan from State College, Pennsylvania writes, "So after about 20 years, Microsoft has figured out how to remake Track and Field without the pad while bringing Nick Arcade into the home. And Sony just gave up and said, look, shareholders, we got some of that motion shit. I feel like all Nintendo would have to do is release the next iteration of console hardware that they've been working on to completely crush Microsoft and Sony's attempts to snag some motion market, not to mention their attempt to expand their user base. Just based on how little Wii Motion Plus has been used, and also how half of the Wii Remote's capabilities are not being used, I think Nintendo's got a handful of long-term aces up their sleeves. What are your thoughts?"
Can I start?
James, I think this was written from your alt account, isn't it? I mean, the...
No.
Nick Arcade and Track and Field and...
The alt account would be far
shit.
More... I would not have worded it that way.
Yeah.
I would have worded it more in terms of, like, look, we invented motion controls! because that's how Sony handles their press conferences.
I know, they claim everything.
Well, I do think a lot of the motion control stuff from the other companies this year was underwhelming, and a lot of copycat stuff. I mean, really lacking in imagination.
Yeah, I mean, we asked the question in the pre-E3 show, you know, how directly would they play on Nintendo's turf? And the unanimous answer was, oh, it's going to be pretty direct. I would say it was marginally more direct than I was expecting.
It did not change everything. No, definitely not.
We'll see with Kinect what kind of impact that makes on the market. You know, the idea that you just have this one thing and then you don't have to buy any accessories and, you know, sort of obviously it's going to be great for fitness programs and all that. Yeah, it may catch on in the longer term, I don't know, but just from a personal point of view, it did not move me to buy a 360.
It certainly had more ideas than the Move did that are distinct to it. I mean, the dance game, what was it called?
The harmonics dance game.
Yeah, I mean, like that, if that's really doing what they said it's doing, and it's hard to tell because I didn't play it, and I didn't see anybody but professional dancers play it. Right. And some people speculated that maybe it's just giving them points and not really keeping up. But if it's really doing what they say it is, that's an idea that couldn't have been done on any other interface. But on the flip side, their bowling games and stuff like that, I mean, they basically stepped on the turf and said, hey, I like this place.
Sony was just pretty much saying, like, yeah, look at us, we're more precise. Okay, well, it makes sense because you have newer hardware.
Right.
Yeah, and I'm not even sure that they are more precise. I've actually heard from some people that it really wasn't all that accurate.
Probably comes down to the game, I'm sure.
I've heard there was lag issues with the Move.
Well, I think the biggest issue that I've heard about Move that sounds a little troubling is the recalibration, in the sense that it's quite a lot more time-consuming than it is for something like Wii Motion Plus.
Well, I mean, the biggest issue I've heard with Move is that you have to buy 1,000 things to use it.
Well, there is.
Yeah,
that.
It's really piecemeal the way they're releasing that stuff, you know, because the camera, you may or may not already have it. I don't know why you would, but you know, you've got the camera, then you've got the $50 controller, but you can't really play much with just the one controller.
No,
so.
you need another controller and their navigation controller, basically.
Although you can use the DualShock just as a sort of cheapy way of.
But how would you hold that? I mean, that feels like
it doesn't sound ideal, does it?
No.
And I mean, you can always argue that, well, you had to buy all these controllers for Wii too, but it's like, yeah, but those were the controllers for Wii.
Yeah.
Whereas with PS3, you've already bought a bunch of controllers for it and a bunch of other accessories.
Yeah, I mean, you got a remote and nunchuck, whereas this you're going to have to buy the remote and nunchuck.
Yeah, it's funny with the pricing, it's almost like, you know, they're aiming this at the casual audience, but the price is going to make it something that probably only the most hardcore PS3 people are going to buy.
Well, there's already been the sort of rumblings about Kinect being too expensive at $150.
Yeah, that's ludicrous for Kinect.
It's currently where people seem to think it's going to weigh in when it's all said and done. But if you look at the Move, when you talk about $50 for the one unit, but then you've got, you know, a second
camera's
one and
$50.
The camera, the sub controller, that it's getting in the same territory.
And that's for one player versus the Kinect, which is two.
Yeah, and the Kinect is at least self-contained.
Yeah.
That is the one good thing about Kinect, as I say. Once you've got it, that's a one-off investment.
Right, yeah. But will Kinect work when you're sitting down, though? That's what I want to know.
It's a funny thing to make fun of them for, but I think it's a serious problem if you look at... I mean, for me, the most interesting, the most compelling thing I saw for Kinect was just using the dashboard and playing movies and running through menus.
I mean, that demo was actually kind of cool.
Yeah, like, if it was $50, I might buy it just for the interface on the system.
Xbox,
but,
Zoom.
But I'm not going to navigate menus on my console while standing up.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure for things like that, they could make it work. It's probably just a more intricate...
Yeah, like the driving game. Where it like looks at your feet.
Yeah, which that really would be a problem if you can't do the driving games.
Well, the driving game itself, I don't know, that game was weird.
Yeah, the funniest article I read about it was on Kotaku, where they went around asking everybody, just trying to figure out what's...
Yeah, well, that was Totillo, wasn't it? That was his kind of... Because he had the experience where he tried to pull up a chair while playing one of these games, and they were like, oh, don't do that.
The phrase that one company used was, oh, this game is optimized for standing.
It's a
Which is the funniest thing
you.
I've ever heard.
I mean, what you got to understand is how they were showing that they basically had these fish bowls in the Microsoft booth that like they were these glass encasements that a person was playing in, and there was nothing in the room but the TV, the Kinect, the person demoing it, and a person looking like they're running for their lives. I mean, it was the weirdest setup until you saw Sony's, where it looked like Total Recall with the Move controller and the 3D glasses.
The 3D glasses. Yeah, we saw a guy playing game. We saw a guy playing the boxing game for PS3, and he was holding two different colored Move wands and had 3D glasses on. And I thought the first thing that popped in my head was that bitch at the end of Superman 3 who turns into a cyborg and scared the shit out of me when I was 8 years old.
I remember.
So now for the 3D stuff, where do those glasses come from? Are they sold?
They are Sony's glasses you buy for $150.
They are really expensive, aren't they?
Wow, what a ripoff.
They are called the active shutter glasses.
Yeah, it's a weird theme. It's because it's not a projector, it's a screen.
Didn't they have active shutter 3D glasses for the Genesis, was it? Sega tried this and it was a complete failure.
John, don't spoil the feature now. Come on, man.
I've never heard of that, but I did actually, I didn't play much Xbox or PlayStation stuff this show. I didn't have time to get into a lot of it, but at one point I was walking around Sony's booth. I checked out, I played some Pixel Junk Shooter 2 for a while, which was great, but then I on the other side, they had some 3D stuff, and I saw someone playing the Sly Cooper Collection, which is not a product I'm interested in. I'm not really a fan of those games, but there was only one person, it was a single player game. So one person was playing it, but there were two pairs of glasses. So they were showing it in 3D and there was an extra pair of glasses. So I figured, oh, I'll just pick those up and put them on, which I did. Looked at the screen. I thought it looked really bad. And I was standing directly in front of it, you know, and I wasn't a fan of it at all.
Doesn't it just inject voltage into the actual glass part itself? And it's very weird.
Yes, Sega tried it with the SegaScope 3D glasses for the Sega Master System way back in the day.
For the Master System.
Yeah, the Master System.
It's got like built-in Bluetooth transmitter in there to determine how much it should allow through and stuff. I mean, it's just insane.
I mean, to go back to sort of what Dan seems to be of the opinion that, you know, Nintendo should be able to swat off these incursions into motion control from their competitors relatively easily. I think they've staked their claim to the territory so well. I think there is some truth to that, and cost is going to be a barrier, you know, even with some of these bundles that they're going to do with the new Xbox 360, the slimmer one, or the PS3 Slim bundle with this, that, and the other. It's still going to be a pretty significant cost barrier. So I think they don't have too much to worry about.
Well, my concern with his email, and he said that he feels like Nintendo would have to do is release the next iteration of their console hardware. But Nintendo's biggest advantage right now is their in-homes. So resetting their hardware takes away that advantage, whereas the other two manufacturers...
No, I don't think that's something that I think that for now you stay the course. And
right, but I mean, I don't think his strategy of just put out your next system, it's fine, is what they need.
But it is interesting, I think, the point about Motion Plus hasn't been used very much yet. You know, what kind of really, you know, impactful applications can they bring out on Wii that are motion leveraged that they haven't already in the sort of post Wii Sports?
They didn't show much other than Zelda.
Zelda was very much what we expected. But yeah, they didn't have anything more. I mean, Johnny, it was you that said, you know, if it's just Zelda, then they failed on that element of the strategy.
Well, they
I mean,
failed
do you still
to
feel that
make
way?
Motion Plus like a significant part of the industry. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, they showed two 2D platformers too, so...
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think Nintendo had a great showing at E3, and I think Zelda looks really good. I think it's going to be a great game. But in terms of, if I was a third party right now, I wouldn't even consider remotely putting Motion Plus in my game. Certainly not as a requirement. I mean, you look at what happened to Ubisoft with Red Steel 2, and then you look at the extremely slim support from Nintendo for this thing. Yeah, there's a lot of Motion Pluses out there, but do people understand what it does? Do they understand why they should keep it on their controllers? Do they even know where they are at this point?
Mike didn't.
Yeah, I mean, Nintendo says that they've made this big, you know, they say that they've taken this great step by putting it into the system box now because they're including Wii Sports Resort
yeah.
in the system. And I agree, that would have been great if they had done it when Wii Sports Resort first came out, you know, before it sold all these units. But the other thing is, they're going to give all these people Motion Pluses, and those people are never going to play anything other than Resort and maybe Zelda with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it's just not part of the system. It is an accessory. It is not part of the system.
It's very curious just why they seem to have been so reluctant to advance it beyond the sort of boundaries of Wii Sports Resort and Zelda. And I mean, even...
And Zelda is basically Wii Sports Resort.
It's the same game.
I mean, even Anuma in interviews, you know, either Iwata asked or whatever else he's done around E3, was basically saying there was a point where... You know, he didn't feel like they were even going to put it in Zelda, and then at some point he was convinced otherwise that they could sort of transpose the work done on Wii Sports Resort over, basically, and which appears to be exactly what they've done.
Yeah, that is exactly what they did. What I think's interesting, though, is we can finally see with Zelda how Wii Motion Plus actually can live in a full game. Mm-hmm. As opposed to a collection of games designed to show off specific capabilities of the device.
Yeah, that are sort of very narrow, right. sectional kind of things that are ultimately to be played in sort of short bursts.
And it was actually kind of weird to be asked to do different things at the same time using the Wii Motion, different actions. Because in Skyward Sword, you know, you might be asked to roll something, throw something, and then do like an angular slash, a thrust, all kind of consecutively, which isn't right. something that you ever did in Wii Sports Resort.
You switch it up very quickly. I mean, I think Zelda feels totally different than anything else I played on Wii for the simple fact that you're moving around with a joystick while you use Motion Plus. And that seems like a really obvious thing to do, and yet Motion Plus has been out for over a year, and this is the first... And Motion Plus was announced over 2 years ago.
Yes.
And this is the first game we've even seen announced that allows you to do that. I mean, you can kind of do it in Red Steel, but it's first person, and it's not one-to-one in the same way that Zelda is.
No.
And I'm sorry, I hate the term one-to-one because it's complete horseshit.
Well, that's I mean, I don't think you really want anything to be quite one-to-one.
Zelda's a lot more responsive.
No, as I said when I talked about Red Steel 2, it's sort of funneling things into discrete moves for the most part.
Zelda's a lot more freeform. But being able to do that while you move around with a joystick at the same time feels like a new experience that I haven't played in any other Wii game. And we haven't seen anything else even announced.
Real question is, does Nintendo have these things, you know, more sort of motion-leveraged ideas up their sleeve left for the finale of the Wii's life cycle, the last couple of years? Or is it going to be more in the direction of New Super Mario Bros. Wii, or, you know, what we're seeing this year with DKC Returns and whatnot, where they're going to say, well, we've kind of, you know, the bridge games or whatever, we've graduated people where we don't have to do that.
They're going to have to create new franchises then.
It's not so dissimilar with the example of DS, where, you know, maybe the touch and the dual screen stuff kind of is there earlier on, or is the hook, but ultimately you end up playing New Super Mario Bros. On that too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, they're kind of running through their potential 2D platformers. So
I mean, it does seem like the Motion Plus, the reason why Nintendo sort of went that way, segmented the market and all this stuff, other than just obviously they made Wii Sports Resort and that was a profitable enterprise in itself, to say the least. But also it seemed like that was their way of actually trying to achieve more with motion. You know, I think they probably hit the ceiling of what you could do with the standard Wii Remote relatively quickly. And so they said, well, if we want to push it, if we want to do more with motion, this is how we're going to do it. But since that point, they do not seem to be coming forward with a bevy of games that they're developing. And certainly, you know, Zelda in itself may be a sufficiently sort of colossal experience that, you know, it will all seem worthwhile anyway. But in terms of the prolific kind of element to it, I mean, it's just not there.
I feel like it's the expansion pack all over again. I mean, there are very small number of games that use it well and wouldn't be as good without it. But ultimately, it feels like something Nintendo put out there and never really gave, you know, they gave it short shrift. And I feel like that's what's happening with Wii Motion Plus. And I heard from some developers that Nintendo's really putting a lot of pressure on third parties to use Wii Motion Plus in their games. And clearly those efforts are not working because other than the Conduit 2, I can't name a third party game that I saw that used Motion Plus at the show. Can you guys think of any other third parties?
Not offhand, no. In terms of Nintendo published side, was it Fling Smash uses Motion Plus, I believe, the R2 developed game?
Fling Smash does. There is the Majesco game, Swords.
God, no.
We will never speak of it again. does use Motion Plus. Stuff like Mario Sports Mix doesn't look like it's going to support it.
It does not.
Which is strange.
Which the answer I got on that was no.
I just think it's because there's a problem where you've got this kind of gray area where it's not necessarily very demonstrable what real enhancement Motion Plus is going to give you. And then in that area, they're going to decide against making it mandatory at least. Or perhaps even just skip putting any kind of Motion Plus enhancement in at all, because, you know, at the end of the day, you're not risking cutting yourself off from people who aren't willing to pay for a Motion Plus. So
I think,
so you really are just talking about those experiences at the total extreme end of the spectrum. Like, yes, this is something that we've conceived that could only be done with it. And that those are rare to this point.
Well, it's very Nintendo to come up with a software concept and then just make hardware to make it work, right?
Like, I mean, bongos?
We've seen that, and going all the way back to like the GBA camera, yeah, the Super Scope, and also that the Pokemon card.
But at least
reader.
The camera was self-contained with its software.
Yeah, but I mean that's kind of what Nintendo tends to do. They don't really think long term. Like, oh well, is there going to be support for this peripheral that we're creating long term? They're like, we want to make this game. We can make this peripheral relatively cheaply. Let's just do it and just figure it out later.
I suppose my fear is ultimately to answer the question that I'm less sanguine about the idea that they've got some real legitimate motion leverage experiences up their sleeve, because I think it's always been more about that's the entry point. That's how they've got people onto the system, interested in the system. Not so much, okay, when we're in year 5 and 6 of the system and everyone's already bought it, what are we going to get them to buy next? I mean, there will be some of those, but not very many.
Right. The caveat here is Nintendo's already made their money on you.
Yeah.
Whereas Microsoft and Sony probably haven't.
The only games that I could think of that they would do it, they've already announced is going to be a 3DS game, which was Pilot Wings, which is the most obvious franchise. Says, hey, maybe they could use it with this. And nope, that's already on the 3DS.
Yeah.
So it's almost like they, you know, John was saying they make these hardware basically to support a game. And does that feel kind of like a more toy maker approach to doing things? Like,
that's how they kind of view themselves.
We'll make this right now because we can sell this right now.
Well, I just think they had to give people a reason to buy another Wii Sports game, and that became Wii Motion
Plus. I don't
think
they needed to, though. I think they could have just said, this is Wii Sports 2, you will buy it, and that would have happened. They could sell the original Wii Sports in stores, and it would probably sell a million copies, even though everyone already owns it. I mean,
they would think it's new.
So there's another layer to Dan's email that involves sort of Nintendo announcing a new system next year, and that's a big topic. I think we might have to come back to that at a later date.
We kind of touched on it earlier, though.
I have a lot more thoughts on it, but I think it's best that we move on because we have a lot more emails I want to get to. So Greg has the next one.
Yes, Mario is French from Toronto writes, I know I'm not the only one who is wondering about this. We all know the whole Rare/Nintendo/GoldenEye copyright issue.
God.
But when I got to the GoldenEye part of the Nintendo press conference, I thought to myself, what the dillio? What the hell happened?
I understand what he's saying there.
Well, it's because you're from Canada, because they all speak like that up there. Do you think that Microsoft is letting this one go because the other Rare FPS remake sucked and this will go the way the other did? Is Microsoft getting a cut of the sales of this game, or did they allow Nintendo to release this on the condition that Microsoft can release the original Xbox Live Arcade?
This
shouldn't take very long.
A lot of misconceptions here, and I'm not surprised because I think Activision and Eurocom have brought it upon themselves. I think,
well, they're kind of courting them indirectly.
Yeah,
yes,
I mean, I
think they are being intentionally vague and misleading about nature of the new GoldenEye for Wii.
I mean, it took us a day to figure out what the hell we were really dealing with this game.
I spent 10 minutes at the demo asking the producer, and he would not give me a straight answer about whether this was a remake.
But Johnny had it called before the show. You know, he had it spot on. The fact is, you know, it is a new game based on the GoldenEye yes! premise.
The license, right? Basically.
It's based on the movie,
yes.
Not the game.
But not even really exactly based on the movie, because, of course, it is the different Bond and the story's being reworked. So it's based on the GoldenEye concept, the concept for that movie.
It's based on the book.
Yeah, it's Ian Fleming's grandson. Right.
Yeah.
Not quite.
So let me clear the air here about GoldenEye, because I understand there's a lot of confusion, and we were confused about it. And I finally figured out, after seeing two separate demos of it, I finally realized what the hell's going on. So Activision owns the James Bond license. Okay, they made Quantum of Solace, for instance. The new James Bond movie has been indefinitely delayed due to MGM studio concerns. Okay, so Activision's looking at least another year or two before they can put out a new James Bond
and
game.
And they really couldn't start on it because the next movie's not really underway either.
Right, it's not even in like pre-production. So they've bought this expensive license and they have no movie to base it on. So they need to capitalize, okay? And that license gives them the rights to all the previous James Bond movies, just like when EA had it, they made a game based on From Russia with Love. So this is the same idea. The only difference is it just so happens that there's already been a video game based on GoldenEye that's really popular. And so Activision said, what if we capitalize on this James Bond license and make a new game based on the GoldenEye movie, and we'll just call it GoldenEye 007, because legally we have the right to do so, even though this has fuck all to do with that game Rare and Nintendo made back in 1997.
Yep.
So that's exactly what they're doing, and they are intentionally making it look very similar to the original game.
Oh, yeah.
But I can tell you right now, it does not have the same levels, it does not have the same guns, except when the guns were in the movie. It is based on the same locations, because those locations came from the movie. It doesn't have Pierce Brosnan, because they don't have the rights to his likeness. It does have Daniel Craig, because they do have the rights to his license. It has Judi Dench in it as well, doing a lot of narration.
She was in, she's in both. Yeah, she's in current Bond movies and the original GoldenEye, so that helps.
She was in the GoldenEye movie. So what it comes down to is they are trying to make it look as close to the Rare game as possible without getting sued.
And of course, Nintendo are kind of complicit in this by
support. Nintendo is turning the other way.
They're doing more than that. They're like,
but
hey,
giving
look at
it
this.
A platform in their press conference, which, you know, not a lot of third parties do typically do, especially in one as dense as this year's. You know, where you've got so much to get through, lots of Wii games, few DS games, of the huge 3DS blowout. You know, it's a premium slot for a third party game to get in there. So Nintendo are very much, you know, involved in this sort of minor charade, to put it that way. That's charade two, charade one. If you
they are a co-conspirator in this. Yes,
I could tell you right now. Not only is Microsoft not making any money off this, I guarantee it's chafing their ass because they wish they had thought of it.
Oh yeah,
because it would be a lot easier for Rare to remake its own. Of course, the Microsoft doesn't have the license, so they can't.
Yeah.
But Activision is the only company that could really do this, because they're the only company right now with the James Bond license.
Yeah.
But they don't have the rights to the original GoldenEye game, so they can't remake the game. All they can do is make a new game based on the movie that just happens to look a whole lot like, you know, it's similar to GoldenEye in the way that 3D.GameHeroes is similar to Zelda, except even the name is the same with GoldenEye.
The funny thing is, though, if you look at the four-player split screen, it is right to the edge of being sued similar. I mean,
right. The visual style is blatantly a ripoff. And I mean, the game does play quite a bit differently. And I got to see the single player, which was only up in the Activision booth. I'm sure there's snippets of it in the trailer, but I got to see like a 10-minute run through maybe actually more like 15-minute run through of the dam level. And of course, it's called the dam level because the dam was in the movie.
There is a dam. It is in the movie.
There is a dam, and he jumps off at the end. So at a glance, it looks a lot like the Rare game with better graphics, but it's not. Okay, so it's a new game. And I have to say that the silver lining here, even though I'm sure Rare is furious about this. I mean, anyone, I'm not sure there are many people left at Rare who actually worked on GoldenEye. Some of those people are at Tsunami, and
one of their senior producers is still around, but that's pretty much it.
Okay, yeah. Some of them had gone to Free Radical, and that place is shut down, so who knows where they are now.
It's Crytek UK.
Okay.
I was bought by Crytek.
I have to think a lot of people who actually worked on the original GoldenEye are pretty pissed about this because it is such a blatant ripoff, and it is really at the edge of legality, I have to say. But the silver lining is the game actually looks really good, and it looks like a lot of fun. It looks like it's a very thoughtful design. I was really impressed by the single-player demo because it basically takes a lot of the ideas of what made GoldenEye single player really impressive and progressive back in 1997. You know what? I mean, that game really revolutionized first-person shooters in a lot of ways, paved the way for things like Half-Life and Halo, and it made people for the first time realize you could play a first-person shooter on consoles and it would be good. So, I mean, that it is an important game, and I think what they're doing is they're taking a lot of those ideas about what made GoldenEye great, and then they're stacking on top of that a lot of revisions, a lot of fixes, and a lot of modernization. But, you know, as I was watching a single-player demo, I kind of stopped caring about whether it was legal or not or how they pulled it off. and I realized that this actually looks like a really good game, and it's a Wii exclusive first person shooter that I bet some people on other platforms are going to be jealous of when it comes out, because I actually think it looks really impressive and I'm very excited to play it.
I was reading that you can play with dual analog, right?
You can, yeah.
Yeah, you can play with classic controller, you can play with a GameCube controller, and it's got the, you know, it's got Wii controls with pointing and everything. So
it actually has support for the Pro too. It actually supports both the buttons on there.
Cool.
Functionality. So, which is funny because that's how they actually showed it at the
multiplayer. Yeah, they were handing out Pros, which I thought was pretty ballsy. Actually, I thought that was pretty crazy that they were doing it.
And to think, I thought I'd only ever use my Pro for Soccer Wars.
I thought, man, it's been a long time since I played a 4-player split screen game at E3 with 4 controllers. In fact, the last time I did that might have been Perfect Dark in 2000.
It was kind of weird to play 4-player split screen. It was definitely an odd experience. It's been a very long time.
Yeah, especially at E3. It's like, wow, feels like I've taken a step back. But I thought the multiplayer was really fun. It looked early. They weren't showing very much of the multiplayer, but it was fun. What I played of it definitely feels a hell of a lot like the original.
Oh, yeah.
Just in tone. I mean, the mechanics are a little differently because, you know, they've taken away the health bar. Now it's just a Call of Duty thing. You take damage and it gets red, and when you take too much, you die. Or it regenerates. The characters have unique abilities. The maps are different. They look similar, but they're different. I noticed that you can't open up the grating and go into the tunnel, which I was disappointed by, but maybe that'll change.
Yeah, it's still a very goofy multiplayer because I was playing against somebody playing as Oddjob who was throwing the hat around like a bastard.
I killed so many people with that hat.
The character I was playing as, his special ability was grenades.
Well, that was everyone else but Oddjob.
Oh, okay.
That's the default.
Which is freaking absurd because they would bounce around and you would basically kill yourself more often than you kill them.
I thought the grenades were really fun. They said they're doing sticky mines and all the weapons are going to have alternate fire modes, which of course is kind of an idea
Perfect
for
Dark.
Perfect Dark,
yeah.
Not GoldenEye. I was really excited. Everything I heard about that game, except they said no Wii speak. Even though it has online mode, it has a... Oh, and by the way, this is interesting. I'm not sure how many people heard about this, but the split-screen multiplayer is very much like the original GoldenEye game in that it's just kind of arcadey. You jump in there, you have a few rounds, you set, you know, turn on paintball mode and slap fights, you know, melee only and shit like that. But if you play online, there's no split screen online. So if you're playing online, it's just you, it's one player per system.
Right.
And the online multiplayer mode is set up a lot more like Call of Duty, where you build up experience and you unlock perks and, you know, things like that. So it's almost like two completely separate multiplayer modes and a very impressive looking single player. I think it looks great. I was like shocked at how how exciting it was.
Well, I mean, you had to figure it wasn't going to be complete crap, because otherwise, even if it does have the logo, Nintendo wouldn't put it on their press conference. I mean, they had enough material in their press kit they didn't cover. They could have.
They put Red
slot.
Steel in their press conference back in 2006.
Well, but look at what came out alongside Red Steel, though. I mean,
as I say, this year was really busy. Whereas the launch window stuff
compared
was
to the
not
rest
so.
Of the crap that we launched with, Red Steel was still a decent game.
Yeah. Well, okay. We can argue that another time.
No,
so,
Raving Rabbids was its best competition.
So the next letter is from Chris from Chicago, who writes, "For fans like me, the 3DS is an automatic purchase. However, in order to be truly successful, Nintendo has to appeal to the people at the margin, people who are making a choice between the 3DS and what I consider to be its main rival, the iPod Touch. Has Nintendo done enough with the 3DS to convince people to choose it over its competitors?"
Interesting question, this. I mean, what is kind of a response to these people probing about, you know, what they think of their, you know, who is their competition these days or whatever, is always sort of key to downplay Apple, although they have said things about, oh, well, we are competing with them to some extent, but he says, well, we're competing against everything. We're competing against everything that demands people's time, you know, whether it's be books or, you know, the films or whatever else. And so, you know, he was stressing the fact that it had to be unique and therefore carve out its own place in people's schedules rather than just trying to sort of stop people from going with the iPod instead. I mean, I think to start with, this is going to be primarily for fans. I mean, I think we're seeing that with what it's giving you, the fact that it's giving you a DS with an analog slide pad with updated games like Star Fox 64.
Much nicer
Ocarina
graphics.
Of Time.
Yeah.
I mean, I talked about your virtual console being on the 3DS, the idea that we're giving people games they already know they like in addition to the new experience. And they seem to have done that in a somewhat different slant with some of these updated games in 3D. But it's the same principle. It's still aiming mainly at the fans. But I think what they're also counting on is that it's going to achieve mainstream resonance, because when you get it out there in people's hands, the 3D effect is going to make an impression on people and get that word of mouth going, very similar to what happened with Wii.
Yep.
And then from there, it will propagate outside of that little, you know, sort of bubble of the Nintendo base.
The difficulty is going to be showing it, because at E3, it was tethered to a model who had to wipe the screen every so often.
This system will be sold through word of mouth like nothing ever before, because it's almost impossible to advertise effectively.
No, yeah. I mean, what they're going to have to do, as I say, is they're going to have these events where they organize it so they get in touch with, you know, whatever, these alpha bloggers or whatever, you know, these social networking nodes that influence a bunch of other people, and they get them together.
Going to have some 3DS parties like they had with the Wii.
I would do like public installations beyond GameStop.
They're going to team up with the retail, obviously, but I think they'll do other things, you know, malls, all sorts of stuff, you know, road shows, essentially. You know, but they've done stuff like this in the past. Even
somebody
with, like,
will have to lose a 3DS prototype in a bar in a blog and pick it up.
They're going to be, I think, more aggressive than we've ever seen. Firstly, because they have more money than ever before to launch a very massive marketing campaign. But say, as you said, Johnny, the core reason is just that you have to. It necessitates it. It's going to be on the basis of word of mouth, because it can't be demonstrated through commercials or anything like that. And certainly on the basis of the very strong response at E3, it seems like if you get it in people's hands, the word will spread very positively.
Let me tell you, so I'll make a prediction right now. When the 3DS demo units get to retail, there will be lines out the door
of
people
no question.
Wanting to play this for themselves.
They should get those demo units out there, like, immediately.
Should probably do it now.
Immediately means.
Yeah, they've got the prototypes. They had a lot of systems at E3. Maybe that's...
One estimate I had heard about 120.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there are plenty out there. I'm sure there's a lot more than that, because they had a whole set in Japan right after E3, and I doubt it was the same units.
Like I said, they've got the base covered in terms of they know they want it, as Chris points out, and then I think they will mobilize a very significant effort to get everyone else interested, and I think it will because of the 3D, and as similar to what we talked about with motion controls or whatever, that's going to be the hook. That's going to be the entry point. And then, you know, how much that ends up being a defining part of how people experience the system going forward, who knows? You know, how much is going to influence game design, how much the novelty wears off, we don't know yet. And I'm not sure Nintendo's too worried about that. I think they just think this is an incredible hook to get people interested in it that wouldn't otherwise be interested in it, and also just to make it very separate in people's minds from things like the iPod, that it's going to have its own identity and it's going to appeal to people in its own way, or it doesn't seem like it's just a substitute product.
Right. Yeah, and you know, I have a feeling that within a year or two, you'll start to see this 3D screen technology show up on cell phones and iPods and things like that.
Well, I think just because the taking 3D pictures could become popularized, and then everything will want to be able to do that.
The camera doesn't. The problem is they got to increase the resolution on those cameras. Mm. It still looks shitty even in 3D. The thing is, the more detail that you have in the picture, the more pronounced the 3D effect is. I mean, that was one of my problems, is that I took a 3D photo on the 3DS and then looked at it and I was like, well, it's not really that 3D, but it's kind of hard to tell the foreground from the background because everything looks like a gray blob.
Mm. But you were saying about, you know, the idea that once you see all these screens showing up in other devices.
Yeah, I mean, that's when the other aspects of the system, especially the software exclusivity, but, you know, things like having the camera built in, things like having the tag mode, you know, having some online stuff that maybe other systems aren't doing, you know, ways for games to interact with each other.
Yeah.
Things like having a good joystick. I mean, the iPod Touch can't compete with the slide pad, let me tell you.
It is a big deal. I think they will do enough to convince a pretty broad range of people to ultimately get on the bandwagon.
Okay, well, let's move on. And James has the next question.
Yes, so Tween20 from Connecticut writes, I was wondering if anyone knew what a DS or DSi game looks like on the 3DS. Will the resolution or 3D screen distort or change the picture in any way? Also, I was surprised that Pikmin 3 was such a dismal no-show at E3. I had expected that the game would be pretty far along, if not nearly complete by now. However, in an interview with IGN, Miyamoto made it sound like the game was not even in the hands of a full development team, and that it is still a Wii title. Can you speculate wildly on why there has been such a delay?
Well, if you want wacky speculation about Pikmin 3, just follow this. What other thing that we already knew about was notably absent from the press briefing?
The vitality sensor.
Put him to sleep.
This is it, though. What it is, the Pikmin being these, you know, wild creatures, well, they're going to try and bring that in more. So if you are nervous, if your pulse is too high, they sense fear and turn on you and won't obey your orders. It will be, Olimar will find himself horribly beaten to death and sort of cannibalized like piranha. That is my feeling on why we haven't seen Pikmin 3 yet. He said speculate wildly. I'm just giving the people what they want.
I mean, I think it's a good sign. I think, you know, for one thing, it's a good sign that they've got enough other good software right now to show that they're not desperate to show something that's clearly not coming out this year.
Really?
Yeah, I think that's fine. But also, in addition to that, I think it's good that they still have it in a small team. They're still doing like concept design, pre-production on it, because that tells me that it's not just a straightforward sequel, that they are trying to think of new things to do with it. And maybe they're, you know, maybe they've gotten mired down in some weird experiments with vitality sensor or any number of other things. But at least it means that they're experimenting, that they're reaching for the stars here. You know, it tells me that it's not going to be a straightforward...
A rote successor to
now,
what we've
now we can
seen.
Show 200 Pikmin on the screen at once.
Yeah,
you
well,
know,
they,
it's going to be something
they care
new.
About it enough to put some time into it and actually, you know, throw a real team at it.
What we know about it now, it seems, is that, yes, it is not going to be on 3DS. So the time, the mystery surrounding it and whatever time's being invested and all that at the conceptual stage is not related to the fact that it's on an unreleased platform.
Maybe it'll use Wii Motion Plus. Huh?
Maybe. You can bowl them or basketball shoot them.
I think people are certainly, at least over here, that were aware of it, you know, were expecting something on Pikmin because Miyamoto did kind of voluntarily mention it again when he accepted a BAFTA fellowship over here.
Yeah. Yeah, that was weird.
Given that, you thought he might have been mooting an appearance a couple of months hence, but apparently not.
Well, and it might be that he thought at the time they would announce at E3, and then things changed.
And let's not forget, you know, I mean, Punch-Out, which, you know, was a fairly major title for them, you know, kind of occupied the same slot as Galaxy this year, kind of last year, sold pretty well, was never at E3.
Right. I mean, if you go by the Excitebot schedule, they could announce Pikmin 3 tomorrow, and it could be out before Metroid.
I'm not expecting that, and obviously Excitebots was the most minor release conceivable for something from Nintendo, the way they handled it.
I think Pikmin 3 will probably be announced before TGS this year. It won't come out until next year, but I think it'll probably be shown this year.
It's eminently possible. I really feel that, you know, you've seen them announce games at that time of the year before, like Punch-Out, so yeah, I wouldn't be worried about it.
So as far as the backwards compatibility stuff, they definitely were not showing any DS or DSi games on the 3DS. I mean, I expect they'll look exactly the same as they do on your current system.
On the top screen, all that, which is high res and stuff. I mean, it'll just be like kind of how GBA games look on your DS. You know, there'll be a little bit of black border around it. You know, it'll just fill out what it's supposed to fill out resolution wise. And you've got the 3D slider and everything, it'll just be turned off. So it won't, I mean, as what we have heard from the impressions that you've given us about 3DS is that, you know, the picture does look very crisp and very nice with the 3D effect turned all the way off. So I think we can anticipate that DS games will look equally sort of nice in that sense.
You know, the touchscreen, none of the demos really had anything on the touchscreen, except for like a couple of little messages. I think it's the same resolution as a DSi screen. Does that sound right? I think it's the same resolution. But, you know, but with the new graphics processor, what we'll end up seeing with 3DS games is that it'll actually be able to show a much higher quality image on the touchscreen. I'm not sure how often that will be used.
Yeah, but will it be? I mean, it seems like the touchscreen now is going to become a much more ancillary sort of part.
It's
going to
take a back seat.
It's going to be for, you know, I mean, basically we've seen it. You know, if you think of the way the touchscreen is used in Star Fox Command, during the flying bits, not the RTS-y bits, or like Metroid Prime Hunters, you know, where it's kind of a HUD, it's, you know, a touch panel.
It's a tool, basically.
It's sort of utilitarian rather than, you know, well, obviously stuff like Kirby Canvas Cursor.
Where it is the game, yeah.
Yeah, I think every game will just have enjoyed the 3D display on it. I think it's going to be every single game. I think it's been mandated.
Enjoy the 3D images.
Please enjoy the 3D visuals. Yes, there was a lot of that.
You can see it in games like Steel Diver, where there are the entire bottom screen is basically just an interface.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, I think we're going to see a great deal of that by the look of it. I mean, obviously, there will be games, and I think this will happen, as we've kind of hinted at previously, more so as the system matures, that pretty much eschew the 3D, because I think what you're going to see is they're going to take advantage of the motion sensing stuff, which doesn't really jive very well with 3D.
Yeah, I'm not sure you want to combine 3D and motion control.
Exactly. So down the road, when the system's matured and it's not all about, ooh, it's 3D, this is why you've got to have it, you know, you'll have more stuff that's like, you know what, you know, why does every game have to be 3D? Here's this game, and we'll use the touchscreen more like it was used on the DS, and we'll use motion sensing if that's appropriate, all this kind of stuff. But that probably will come farther down the line. The early software, the touchscreen, is going to be used, as James said, as an interface tool.
Right. I mean, they have to drive the gimmick home at that point. And it will be. I mean, it's. I know calling it a gimmick is kind of a faux pas, but in some cases, it will be a gimmick. I mean, that's just what it will be.
It's fair enough.
It's an awesome gimmick.
It is an awesome gimmick, but there will be games where it is not an awesome gimmick.
Yeah.
I'm looking at that Resident Evil Drunken Vision trailer.
Yeah, I mean, you could even tell at the show that there's already a pretty wide range of how well the 3D is used, how well it's programmed for, how well the scenes are set up to take advantage of it and to show it well. So there's, you know, it's not something you could just turn on and just do it.
I'm encouraged, though, that so many people seem depressed with some of the stuff there, because I think it's pretty obvious a lot of that was rushed, and obviously some of it showed the signs of being rushed more than others. Like
a lot of 30-second videos.
Perhaps the Resident Evil sozzled edition that James is talking about.
Well, I mean, the funny thing is, some of Nintendo's own stuff, like the Mario Kart demo, seemed rushed. I mean...
I'm sure it was, but that's the point. I mean, if some of this rushed stuff is impressing people away, like, say, for instance, the Metal Gear Solid thing did, when they've actually had time to really craft this stuff,
that demo wasn't rushed. That demo had like 6 months behind it.
Yeah, I mean, the Metal Gear demo is amazing.
But what you don't realize, and what nobody realized, is they actually were playing the game. That was not a video. That was actual gameplay.
Yeah, I mean, it's Metal Gear.
Well, you can tell, I'm sure, who got the dev kits first.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, you can tell who got the dev kits first from who they interviewed for the Iwata Ask segment about
very true.
3DS right. too.
Okay, so let's move on, and John has the next question.
120 from Surrey, British Columbia, Canada writes, I recently joined the forums, thank you, welcome, and have become a frequent visitor to NWR over the past several months. I started listening to your podcast last November and have taken far too long to write in and let you know that it is absolutely fantastic. The assembled team is brilliant, probably not intelligent-wise, but you know what I'm saying.
You mean literally sort of radiant.
James
just emits this sort of glow.
James does have a certain glow to him. I don't know where that comes from, but the assembled team is brilliant, and your thorough and intelligent...
He bathes in buttermilk.
And your thorough and intelligent discussion is unrivaled by any other podcast.
Clearly, as is evidenced by this dumbass conversation we just had.
Yes.
Nice job torpedoing his next sentence before you get it out there, guys.
Sweet, sweet irony.
You just Lusitania'd this entire email. Nice work.
I was wondering how likely you think it is that any more Enix games see a virtual console release. There are several highly acclaimed games that I missed when I was younger and really want to experience, such as EVO Search for Eden, Soul Blazer, and Illusion of Gaia. What about DS remakes? Am I a fool for holding on to hope? Should I just bite the bullet and track down the original SNES cartridges?
I don't think you're going to see DS remakes of Enix games because there's not enough market for those. They're not called Final Fantasy or Dragon Quest, so there's a lot of expense in porting a game to DS, especially if you do it well. That's a pretty, you know, Final Fantasy IV is a multi-million dollar project, I guarantee you. But as far as virtual console stuff, I mean, I'm totally in agreement with you. There are a lot of Enix games from the Super Nintendo era that were very hard to find in America, like very low print runs. And I would even add something like Brain Lord, which I think is a really cool game.
Oh, my God.
You don't like it, James?
No, I just forgotten that game altogether.
Brainlord is actually a super cool game that not many people played and needs to get out there. Soul Blazer is a game that I've always heard about.
I love Soul Blazer.
And have never played. I would love to play it.
I mean, it's one of these things where, as you said, because the rarity and just because you have just imported Super Famicom games cost a shitload, you know, this is prime territory that I would love to explore.
They could turn out Terranigma, which is already in English because it was released in Europe.
Yeah. I mean, it's a curious one though, isn't it? Because when we started the virtual console and we had stuff like, you know, ActRaiser coming out, it's like, okay, I get it, right? The Enix stuff that's not going to get remade is going to come out on virtual console.
Yeah.
And then the Final Fantasy stuff never coming out because they think we can
They're
just keep
remake
re-release.
The shit out of that.
And now we've come to the point where they are putting Final Fantasy on the virtual console, and all these years later, we've barely gone any farther than ActRaiser on the Enix side.
I think one of the games he mentioned, EVO Search for Eden, fucked up beyond imagination.
Like, really? I'm vaguely familiar with
it. That's a game where, like, it's like a side scroller where the animal you control evolves as you beat other animals into, like, different life forms. I mean, it's just. It
sounds awesome.
Enix made some completely insane crap for the SNES.
I think they made a lot of great stuff from the 16-bit era.
I mean, I like these games, but they're just messed up, and I'm not sure.
Yeah, there's
got to
be a market for ActRaiser 2. I mean, I used to
No, there's not. No,
it's surprising that's not on the virtual console, but it hasn't got the best reputation. But you're telling me that
it's not good. That's why it doesn't.
No, it's actually a really well made game. It's just fucking impossible.
Well, no, but it took away the only thing that makes the ActRaiser franchise distinct and said, hey, let's make a Castlevania clone.
James, it feels completely different from Castlevania.
For me, at the time, it's like when ActRaiser 2 is coming out, it's like, am I going to spend all that money to get that? No way. But in terms of an $8, yeah, an $8 or $9, depending whether it's like an import game or something, download, I think a lot of people would be intrigued. It does seem weird that just like I said, we came out of the gate strong with ActRaiser, and now all of a sudden, the Square stuff is pushing forward, and the Enix stuff has fallen by the wayside.
Well, there's more to that than just these games, though. That's kind of a collective event that's happened at the Square Enix
But there's other intriguing sort of. I would compare it also a bit like with sort of Capcom. They sort of seemed eager to get a lot of their early Super NES stuff out and anything that had Street Fighter 2 involved. But then in terms of some of their latter day output, the Mega Man X's, the Demon's Crest, they're not following through.
I think in the case of the Mega Man X's, I think they're convinced they can re-release that crap again and we'll buy it again. But the problem is, I would buy it again because they Capcom.
Mega Man X has already been re-released in the collection, so that's not desperately needed, but I can tell you why the Mega Man X games are probably not available on virtual consoles.
Emulation.
A lot of them use special chips for the Super Nintendo that are probably hard to emulate.
We haven't seen Yoshi's Island yet or anything like that, so it seems like there are some. At least it's just more costly, and people are less willing to plonk down the money, as it were, to make those. But that isn't the case with a lot of these Enix games. I mean, that's kind of what, as far as I know, anyway. So
I think it's just it really is not any different from a lot of other crazy omissions from Virtual Console, and some of it comes down to Nintendo's fault, and some of it is these publishers just not really taking advantage of the market that's out there, I think.
Don't forget, even in Japan, where they're, sort of edging ever more slowly towards 600 games, you don't have these.
Yeah.
And Super Famicom updates are quite a bit more robust in Japan because they're quite obscure things, but not these.
It's weird. I mean, I'm happy to lament all these great Enix games that aren't on the system, but in the end, I don't feel like it's really... There's probably no special reason for this. I think it's all the same reasons that you don't have all the classic Konami and Capcom and other games on the system. It's just Virtual Console is kind of broken.
Yeah.
The release schedule is just fucked up for numerous reasons. And
well, I think there comes a point with VC where there are so many games out there that the companies just feel like if they just throw another one out there, it's just going to get lost in the shuffle.
And it will. I mean,
I think there's an argument to be made for that, but I also think there are ways to solve that problem.
Well, it's also not helping that Nintendo really doesn't do much to promote.
They send out crazy-ass press releases that make no sense.
In America, they kind of did do, some initiative by saying, okay, we're going to make an announcement about the fact that, right, LucasArts are here, they're on board, they're releasing their stuff, so we're going to start with the Star Wars stuff, the zombies ate my neighbors and all that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They made that more notable rather than just the one game that gets shoveled out every now and again.
I mean, if Square Enix threw out Soul Blazer next week, I mean, it's not going to attract a huge amount of attention because it's going to get buried on a press release that mentions Wii Fishing Pro 3 from some developer you've never heard of that guaranteed plays like crap.
I'm actually writing a feature that delves into some of this stuff with Virtual Console, but one of the key things, and this is long overdue, but Nintendo needs to spin off Virtual Console releases from WiiWare and DSiWare. They need to announce it separately. They need to put it out on a separate day of the week. They need to basically make a new channel for it. Honestly, they give it a different shop. It's fucking hard to find things.
As James says, it's like 3 bits of WiiWare, usually 5 or 6 bits of DSiWare.
It is literally lost in the shuffle.
They might get used to not seeing a Virtual Console game on that press release, and then when they skim over a story based on the press release, they might fail to notice the fact that there is one that particular week. I mean, that's the level we've reached now.
Their head's probably been so distorted by all the dumbass puns they've put in the press release that by the time they reach the Virtual Console, they don't know what's going on anymore. They're like, why are they talking about sailboats in this press release? I don't understand.
I was trying to remember, there's a really shocking one the other week, and it's escaped my memory. That is a shame.
Well, Greg, I've got something that won't escape your memory because it's written down, and that's the next letter.
Oh, that is slick. I'll give you that one. Kyle in Wilmington, Delaware. If that is the real name of where you live, Kyle. Right. Any other year, news that Nintendo is finally licensing and releasing an actual voice chat headset for Wii would be big news, especially when three promising first-person shooters are expected on the market for Wii this fall, all leveraging multiplayer as a key selling point. Is Nintendo allowing them to emulate Wii Speak, or is this another peripheral requiring special coding to be supported on its own? Any word if GoldenEye or Black Ops will support it?
The problem is neither one of those games is even going to support Wii Speak, much less the headbanger headset.
Yeah, so the way it works, we could be certain that Wii Speak support is a prerequisite for any kind of compatibility with this new headset.
If you know, PDP is actually the company that's manufacturing this thing. It is officially licensed by Nintendo, which there was some concern over an email chain today that we had internally that like a future Wii firmware update might actually like invalidate this thing. But being that it's officially licensed, I think you can be safe.
It uses the reason we had that is it uses a bit of wizardry to make itself work. Basically, as Aaron Kaluska collected from somebody working on it, they basically appropriates the code Nintendo wrote for Wii Speak, changes a few things, and drops it on there as a new controller.
Yeah, and I don't really see why they would go that route if it doesn't have native support for all the previous Wii Speak games.
Yeah, because it doesn't, does it? You will not be able to use this headset with Animal Crossing or the Conduit.
Right. That's really strange to me that they wouldn't make
There's
sure
There's got to be some reason Nintendo must have done something with the Wii Speak that blocks them from just accessing
it out.
Its channel.
Okay, so if that's the case, if there's no hope of backwards compatibility with all the other, like, five
From
Wii
what they
Speak
told
games,
me, they said it's not that there's no hope. The exact phrasing they used was that there's, because I asked them, I said, is there any word of, you know, maybe patching for, you know, for Animal Crossing or Monster Hunter Tri or any of those things? And they said, we have no word on that just yet.
Okay, if it revolves around patching games, there is no hope.
That's the phrase, no. Patching.
So back to my point, if they cannot make it be backwards compatible with all the previous Wii Speak games, then what they should do is forget about piggybacking on some kind of driver that Nintendo's already made for Wii Speak, make their own set of tools, their own completely separate driver, and reduce the packet size on this thing and make it work more efficiently so that it's easier for developers to put this in. They might actually get more support for the headset than Nintendo does for Wii Speak. And maybe games like GoldenEye and Black Ops that are already, Call of Duty Black Ops, that are already going to have online multiplayer will be able to fit this into their netcode and actually make it run without causing gameplay lag, whereas maybe they can't even pull that off with Wii Speak because the API is so shitty for Nintendo.
Or are unwilling to get into that problem solving because they just think you know, a lot of people just are kind of down on Wii Speak at this point.
Yeah, and the Conduit guys are willing to... They'll do whatever it takes to make it work.
Gluttons for punishment.
Vitality sensor had come out, they would have said it was going to be in there. They would have found a way.
They're willing to try any kind of technology solution.
If Nintendo came out with a pinata that you attach to your Wii Remote, they would put it in there somehow.
Yeah. The problem with the headbanger...
is its name, for one, but...
it's an okay name, but the problem with the headbanger is that they are in the very real situation of this thing's coming out in 2010 and the only game supporting it is Conduit 2.
Yes.
So they're selling this to a subset of a subset of a subset of the market.
Yes.
And
it's not entirely without merit though.
Well, am I going to buy this thing knowing that the only game I can play with it for the foreseeable future and maybe ever is the Conduit 2?
Mm. I can't remember. Is it possible this is getting bundled with the Conduit?
That would be smart because otherwise I don't see how they're ever going to sell it.
I thought I had heard something to that extent, but if I heard it, it would have been secondhand.
It looks like a nice piece of hardware. I picked it up. I put it on my ear. It was comfortable. It's very lightweight. The end of it glows when you're muted, which I think is very clever.
That's pretty cool.
The tip that reaches out in front of your face, the very tip of it glows red.
But, I mean, the one bright spot is that the Conduit developer said it basically took them a day to implement this device.
But they're already supporting Wii Speak. So if these if these other shooters are not, then what does it matter?
Yeah. That's the problem, is it? Like I said, Wii Speak support is going to have to be a prerequisite. And then after that, it's no considerable barrier to then extend it to the headset.
If they can't get Capcom to patch Monster Hunter, they shouldn't even release this thing.
It's huge. It's a must-have to me.
Yeah.
But can you even patch games like Monster Hunter?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think it's possible. It's rarely done. The killer app is already out. You just have to make it work.
Yeah.
The other big unknown about the headbanger headset is that we don't really know how it sounds because it wasn't actually playable or wasn't actually functional.
Yeah, it'd be kind of hard to demo on the E3 show floor, that's for sure.
What? I can't hear you!
The sound quality is amazing!
Yeah, I mean, we don't really know if it sounds better than we speak. I mean, it should. It seems like it should, but...
Well, it should just because it'll actually be going into your ear instead of going through that crappy WeSpeak speaker.
It should just because people will actually be able to hear what's going into the microphone versus sitting 5 feet away screaming at it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it can't be anything but an improvement because WeSpeak is just that bad.
Yeah, I mean, if you remember when WeSpeak was first announced, I was like, okay, well, I'm glad they put something out there. And I think it's an interesting Nintendo-style take on voice chat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
If it works, I'm behind it. And the problem is they put it out there, it doesn't really work.
No, I mean,
I think conceptually I can tolerate it, but the implementation of it is so bad.
I mean, it just from a physics standpoint, if you think about it, there's something very wrong with the WeSpeak.
Yes.
Like the physics of it, just you think about it long enough, you're like, this was a stupid idea. And then when you go do it, you're like, wow. Physics works. It is a stupid idea.
Isn't that nice when science accurately predicts what's going to happen?
Science accurately predicts what peripherals are going to be shit.
Yeah, so unfortunately, I think the headbanger is all but dead on arrival. And I hate to be that cynical, but if it's not compatible with WeSpeak and if they can't make it easier to implement than WeSpeak for the developers, if they can't get more games on board, then there's no reason to own it. I mean, I'm not going to buy one just for the Conduit 2. That's kind of sad.
Yeah.
Well, the next and final letter is from Adolf, who writes in from Denton or Arlington, Texas, depending on the day of the week.
He's writing from work or home.
He asks, Johnny has a lamb as his icon on the website forums. Why is that? Can everyone else explain why they have that username and avatar for themselves? To speak to the first part of the question, the lamb is... I used to have this Miyamoto/Don Corleone Godfather avatar.
You mean Yamauchi.
Yamauchi.
Yeah, Yamauchi, sorry.
You can't really imagine Miyamoto as a stern Corleone type figure.
No, not really. But yeah, Yamauchi as the Godfather. I think I found it on Gaff or somewhere. I don't know. I think I asked permission to use it as an avatar, and the guy said yes. So I always thought that was kind of a funny avatar to use. But then I switched it to the lamb because... This is from Penny Arcade, and it's a comic they did about Bioshock 2. There's a character in there named Sophia Lamb, and she's the kind of the main villain of the game. And so you're always hearing people talk about the lamb, and I think sometimes you see graffiti or scrawling on the wall where someone's written in blood, like something about be afraid of the lamb. Or
Lamb is watching.
Yeah, the lamb is watching. The guys at Penny Arcade rightfully made fun of this and drew this really menacing picture of a lamb, like looking at you with this really creepy look on its face. I thought it was so great, even out of context. That lamb really cracks me up when I look at it because it's just such an evil looking lamb that I made that my new avatar. So that's the story. I stole it from Penny Arcade.
Yep.
Greg, you've got the Yoshi thing.
It's always Yoshi. I love that.
Pretty self-explanatory there.
Yeah.
So John's is always in flux, which probably
it's Monster Hunter currently.
No, now I've changed it actually.
Oh, did you just change? Oh, you changed it to the Lindy's Liquor thing, didn't you?
Yep, I changed it to Lindy's Liquor.
Awesome. Can we move it to Hotel Lindy instead? Because I'm pretty sure there's some shady deals.
That's next
going
up on the rotation.
Yeah, it's next up. But right now. Yeah, that's a liquor store in Inglewood, California. Inglewood.
In the streets, basically.
Inglewood always up to no good, as I've been told.
Yes, that's what I've heard on the streets. That's what my sources have told me.
Yes, that leaves it to me. The name, which is Krim, like the memory type, I've been using for a long time. I don't know where I picked it up. It's been like 10 years I've been using that in various forms on various
things. Even remember where it came from?
I've literally had it for maybe 10 to 12 years, so at this point, no. The icon I'm currently employing is one of our form standard icons that we use when people use icons that are too big. We have a size limit of how big an icon can be, and if you go over, we assign you something, and one of the defaults is the text, I don't think the rules apply to me.
Yes.
Which I use simply because I was basically picked it up when I was probably at the end of my community manager term.
Yeah.
At which point I had pretty much decided the rules didn't apply to me because I was the only moderator reading the forums anyway.
You had the spoon before that. What was that about?
It was part of a that came from a thread where we were basically creating rare characters, which was basically
you put googly eyes
on any inanimate object and it becomes a rare character. So in that case
on the toilet. His name's Toily.
Logo. Yeah. Remember that? That was the actual name of the toilet, wasn't it? Logo?
Yeah, Logo. Something like that.
Oh, God, that's actually authentically funny.
Well, the thing, well, because I mean, it's a British a British name for a large turd is a logger.
Right. Yeah, that's actually kind of hilarious. But yeah, that was the apex of rare is when they actually put eyeballs on a toilet.
Yeah, but you gotta love the banjo games export in the finest of British culture around the world.
So basically, I created like five or six inanimate objects that I gave eyes and angry looking mouths to, and the spoon happened to be the funniest. I think there was like a carrot, but then I realized I actually did do a carrot at one point, and what I created happened to look exactly like what they actually did.
You can't even mock them correctly?
They already did this, and it looks just like mine.
Okay, we're done with the mail. So thank everybody. I'm glad we got through a lot of letters today, and if you send an email about E3, we might be able to catch up with it. There were some that were so long and rambly that I just wasn't sure how to address them. I definitely appreciate the time you took to write in, though, and I hope we've addressed some of your thoughts and concerns. If not, you can bet we'll come back around to it one way or another. Of course, we are willing to entertain any and all inquiries, suggestions, ideas. You can send those to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. We also need your DS stories for big feature next week on episode 200. Can you believe it's this close?
Send us all your Metroid Prime Hunters demo stories.
Yes.
I'd like to hear some of those.
The first thing you drew on PictoChat, come on.
Did you ever get like 8 people together to play Metroid Prime Hunters? I'd be interested to hear about that.
I remember I played the demo, if that counts.
So PictoChat stories, you know, must be people other than our staff who use PictoChat.
Yeah.
So, you know, any kind of stories, any great memories you have, now is the time. Send those in quick-like because it's only a few days away from when you hear this.
Yeah, gotta be in by Thursday evening.
And, of course, the DrunkCast story email. We really haven't gotten a whole lot of suggestions on this. So.
Tell people now we are nowhere near the critical mass.
That's right.
Needed.
We need at least many more
for me to release this information to the public. So, if, to be honest, at this point, you can pretty much just phone in the story, but at least show me some sort of effort.
Show some initiative, damn it.
To say that you do want to know about it. Or maybe they don't, and that's fine. I mean, to be fair, like, that is a legitimate response.
I feel right. like we fucked it and we told them what the prize was. I feel like that was our mistake. I feel like if we had said, there's an awesome prize that James has picked out for you personally,
that,
it would have been much better.
We could have been sued to high heaven. We could have been put on trial in the Hague if we'd...
There is an actual prize here. You could win a game that will technically play on a system that you own.
No, it won't, because it doesn't save right.
Play might be a strong way to describe it.
I'm entertaining the idea of if we get a story that I like, but we don't get enough stories to air the clip of just sending that person the MP3. And then maybe it will be then propagated virally like the new tag mode.
Nice.
Remember, the goal here is either to be as close as you can to right or as completely whacked out as you possibly can.
Yes. I know our listeners are creative. So
yeah.
You have to show us.
Still time. There's still time.
Bonus points if you can. I'm going to give personal bonus points if you can work in the fact that Zelda is coming out in 2011.
Yes. Now, to be fair, I want to give James due credit here.
I did it in person already.
I know you did it in person, but it goes deeper
than that.
I've
groveled already.
Because it wasn't just the fact that it's coming out in 2011, because what James said very specifically was that they will never hit the target on a Zelda game. And it's very clear now that the target was that it was going to come out this year. They pretty much explicitly said, well, we overhauled the whole visual style.
Yes.
And that's why it's not coming out this year, i.e. they missed the fucking target.
Yeah, so I mean, James, they basically said, we fucked up.
So James had it called exactly on what would happen.
But he still thought Galaxy 2 is a Christmas title.
Yeah, but Johnny said that the only thing he could see replacing Zelda in the holiday window was Retro's title, which it is. It's Donkey Kong. A Donkey Kong Country revival about as far away from an open world game as you can get. So,
yeah,
thank you very much.
I predicted like 4 different things that Retro could be making. pretty far off mark.
The Contra spread gun approach to predictions.
Maybe next week I'll tell you guys about what the producer of Donkey Kong and Metroid Prime told me about that whole project. There's some pretty interesting stuff we didn't have time to get into tonight, so I'll tease that for 200. All right, before we go, I also want to announce the new lineup of Retroactive nominees. We're going to play a GBA game on an upcoming edition of Retroactive, and by the time, actually well before this episode goes out, I will have the poll up on the website, on the forum, so you can go find that and vote for your choice. Do you want us and yourself to play through and discuss one of these 6 games? Mother 3 with the English translation patch. No further comment. Drill Dozer. This would be its last chance in the poll. I think it's been, this is its third and last chance in the polls. Pokemon Pinball Ruby/Sapphire. That's one game. It's Ruby and Sapphire, I guess. It's just one. There's only one version. Golden Sun 2: The Lost Age, Sonic Advance 3, or that other Camelot RPG on GBA, Mario Tennis Power Tour, which Stan Ferguson, a former co-host of this show, gave a 10 out of 10 and was mocked for it on somethingawful.com.
Yes, collectively cited as the worst review of that year.
That's right. So, a lot of RPGs in here. I think there's some really interesting stuff. Sonic Advance 3 actually might be the dark horse, but TYP's always said it's awesome. So, there's that. Drill Dozer, a really fascinating game. It's gotten some votes before. It's never won in Retroactive, so it's got one final chance. I don't know. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens here. It's kind of an interesting list. I hope one of these has piqued your interest and that you will go vote. Because Retroactive is really it's an interactive feature between us and you, the listeners. You choose the game we play. Hopefully you play along. We have a kind of a group discussion with your comments included. So go check that out. And within 2 or 3 weeks, we will announce the winner and get started on that. Looking forward to it. With that, we bid thee adieu. Until next time, until episode 200, good day.
See ya.
Roll on 200.
This year it seemed like everybody there were like events lined up after the show each night.
Yes.
More so than we have in past years.
They weren't necessarily lined up either.
True.
There's a lot of
yeah.
sneaking into things, which we're very good at.
I am a member of the European media, apparently.
Yes. You are a man of mystery, an international man of mystery.
Yes.
My favorite moment in sneaking into things, and I'm happy to share this story because it's something that we all should have gotten invites to anyway, and it should have been no problem at all. It was just like a weird bureaucratic snafu is the EA press conference, because we only had enough invites to that for like half of our group. So we had six people going in. I think we only had three invites or something. And I didn't have one, but I wasn't worried about it at all. But James seemed to be a little more concerned about it. So we walk up, and I'm going to take him up to the desk and kind of talk him into it, you know, like tell them that he's with us and it's important that he needs to get in or whatever. And there's a sort of a line of people to go up to the table to check in. And so we're in line to go up to the table, and James observes that, well, there's no one really checking to see if you go in or not. You know, like past the table, there's nothing. Yeah. So he said, I could probably just walk in from here. And I said, okay, do it. And he did.
I walked right by the guy. I'm like, yep, just keep on walking.
Yeah, and then I went up to the table and said, hey, I should be on the list, even though I knew I wouldn't be. Yeah. So they checked and said, oh, I see, you're not on the list. You'll have to talk to a PR representative to, you know, to work this out. And I'm like, okay, and where would she be? And they sort of say, well, I'm not sure, hang around here for a minute. And I'm like, okay, and then I walked in. So this is how we do things.
It's such a dichotomy of moving from the show floor to that room, though. It's pretty jarring the first time you go into the media room.
It is. And the media room's also trippy for me, because I've been so many times that every time I go in there, I see somebody that I know. You know, a lot of times it's somebody I haven't seen in years and years. So I go in there, and I'm always, my eyes are just kind of always darting around looking for friends, you know, just so I can say hey to, because the show is so crazy that if I don't see them or say hello in the media room, I probably won't get to.
No. No, you just like hop back in the lake or whatever and just get caught up in the torrent, the torrent of chaos.
There were
a number of people I saw who I knew out on the floor and just couldn't talk to them. They were like across this, you know, the river of people, and or they were in the middle of a demo. And it's like, at one point I saw Dennis Dyack, and I wanted to talk to him and say, hey man, what are you doing here? You know, are you showing anything? Because I had no idea. I still don't know actually if they showed anything. I don't think they did.
They did not.
You know, just wanted to catch up with him. This is a guy I've talked to a dozen times over the years, and he was in a conversation with someone, and I waited a minute to see if it would end, and then it sort of ended, but then they ran into the bathroom, and I'm like, I'm not going to stand here and wait for him to get out of the bathroom.
I gotta go, like a groupie or something.
I got work to do.
Dennis!
It's just weird, you know.
Dennis, I got toilet paper for you, dude. Here you go.
Dennis, will you sign my copy of Legacy of Kain: Blood Omen for PC?
Can I wash my hands, Johnny? Thank you.
I kind of felt like they played one of the Capcom Resident Evil games and said, okay, now let's make this slower.
What would be easier to make than this? What would require less effort to make?
Hold on. A puzzle game. A Dead Space puzzle game.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Dead Space
puzzle fighter.
It's working for Symphony of the Night.
Oh, that's... Hello. Yeah, that's a weird game.
That's an amazing
game.
The
new Xbox Live Arcade.
Is that Harmony of Despair?
Castlevania. Yeah, that is.
Yeah,
when I saw that, my eyes bugged out. It was like watching 3DS again. It's like, what the fuck?
I watched it for a good 2 or 3 minutes going, oh my god, what is this?
What is it? Is it a puzzle game?
It's a hot mess is what it is.
No, there is a Symphony of the Night puzzle game, and then there's the weird multiplayer side-scrolling thing. These are separate games.
They're both just mind-altering experiences.
Harmony of Despair is a...
That's a fucking terrible title.
They've got like a name generator somewhere in their office. Bam!
It is a terrible
Symphony
name.
Of... Sadness.
We've already done Harmony of Dissonance. I mean, like, oh.
Right. No, it's totally bizarre because it's using all the character and environment graphics from Symphony of the Night, a game that is 15 years old.
And the DS games as well, so in some cases.
But the amazing thing is how small they are on the screen.
It's a really, really bizarre remix of... I mean, you know, we always joke that Iga likes to reuse assets when he makes a new Castlevania game, but he is literally remixing assets in this game. It is the sprite from PlayStation.
Oh, it's so amazing.
When I saw it on the screen, I was like, what the hell is this?
It was easily one of the weirdest things I saw in that booth, and that booth had a lot of weird shit in it.
The graphics remind me of, do you remember on Saturn Bomberman, the high 10 mode? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
10 player Bomberman on Saturn, it just reminds me of that.
Yeah, that's my icon exists because I basically was trolling the Funhouse as supposedly the arbiter of law in the Funhouse, which is
I have also done as well. I have You know, I should be the ultimate arbiter of the Funhouse, I guess, but I've also trolled. I've trolled the entire forums, really.
To be fair, I inherited the title of adjudicator from Ty, who basically was the ultimate troll of the message.
The difference between James' disruptions on the forums and John's is that James does it where he says something in jest, whereas John does it where he says something serious.
Yeah. I tend to kind of just... I try to stay out of forum tussles, but I have a big mouth, so I tend to lip off to people. I've just had some pretty funny comments made about me. Like, I remember Insano Lord one time. I remember one particular thread. I don't even know what it was about, but I was going off on it. And he's like, man, I remember when you used to be cool. It kind of gave me pause. I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of being a dick in this one.
You and Henry Winkler, right?
What was the first reply to that post?
Did you make a picture of John jumping the shark?
Yeah, but John Lindemann never produced MacGyver.
I feel like if our forums passed up the "I remember when you used to be cool, John," and didn't make a reference to the Ice Age, I feel like they failed fundamentally. Pretty much.
Okay, I'm killing it. I'm killing it. We're done with the mail.